What's up, rabbit hole dwellers? I'm excited because we're 48 blocks at the time of recording away from the Bitcoin halving. And it was an interesting one because I'm sat here in a hotel room in Warsaw at the European Bitcoin Film Fest anticipating the halving. And we just spoke to Dominic Frisby all about Bitcoin and his comedic value that he puts into the space. And he's a cool guy, mate, and he's got a lot of interesting perspectives on things. But what did you take away from it, Joel?
I like that we always had like a little side gig or a little joke or, you know, some comments from him. So you could see that he was used to like being in conversations and trying to sort of lighten the mood. But generally speaking, yeah, a lot of good takes. Fascinated by gold bucks who turn into Bitcoin. So there's a story there. And, you know, as usual, our guests are just awesome. So I don't want to waste any more time. Taste time. That could be a funny thing as well.
You don't want to taste any more time?
No. We don't want to waste any more time, guys. I enjoyed this one with Dominic Frisby. And as always, stay curious.
Welcome back to yet another episode here at Rabbit Hole Stories. We've got Dominic Frisby, who's the mastermind behind flyingfrisbee.com and the wonderful newsletter there. And you might have seen the recent brilliant sketch called We're All Fire Right Now, which everyone thoroughly enjoyed, including the wonderful Mr. Musk on X. And we're recording this now at an imminent halving event, and we're about 54 or 55 blocks away from it. Have you got any sort of feelings about that? Are you excited at all, Dominic? Or is it just sort of like another day, TikTok next block, let's keep going?
I remember when the last halving came along, there was so much hype about it beforehand, about, you know, how Bitcoin prices always go up after the halving and all that. And I just thought it was too, like, sometimes you look at a trade and you go, this is too obvious, because everyone's talking about it. So the market's going to do the opposite. And then it didn't. It did what everyone said it was going to do. So I'm really hoping that this time it does something similar. The Bitcoin price itself is looking a little bit jittery at the moment. It's about 63, 64. It went as high as 73 a few weeks ago with the launch of the ETFs. And so, you know, one theory is the excitement about the ETFs has brought the excitement about the halving forward. And we'll find out. But I guess we can only really judge if the halving has been a bullish event, maybe a year from now. And, you know, you've got to be wary with getting too wedded to predictions. But what I'm kind of looking for is a very good last, you know, 7 or 8 months to this year and a nice first maybe quarter. You know, I think we're in the bull cycle now, even though the price is looking a little bit weak. And yeah, we've probably got another year of bull cycle before we go into the next bear cycle. But you never know. It's Bitcoin, it's tech, it doesn't make life easy. It's never made life easy for the bulls.
Yeah, 100%. And if there's one thing you can predict in Bitcoin is that it's fairly unpredictable in terms of you try and second guess what it's going to do, but it always seems to surprise you. But it's forever fascinating sort of like observing the space and sort of seeing how people react to certain narratives and certain things. And one of the reactions that recently have popped up on Bitcoin Twitter are things like App Man, which a very sort of brilliant sketch about how to set up a modern day society, and your recent, we already referred to it, song of We're All Fire Right Now. So how does comedy and singing songs through comedic ways sort of, what's the intention behind that, and how did that all come about for you? Because I read somewhere where your father was some influence to this. Was that right?
Well, my dad was a playwright and he used to write comic plays. And, you know, all I ever wanted to be and all I still want to be is a comedian, but I'm a good host, but I've never been that good a stand up. But my strength has always been writing funny songs. I just love lyrics, and you know, I've just done a tour and it's gone very well, and we had some sold out shows and got standing ovations and stuff like that. But I'd really like to go up a level, and it's quite hard to do that in the UK because I'm sort of seen as a far right extremist because I voted along with more than half of the country to leave the European Union. But apparently that makes me a fascist, far right, whatever. And so, you know, I'm never going to get on the BBC or anything like that. So you have to sort of do it online. But that's what I'm working on. And I'm really... It's currently growing, and obviously Elon Musk shared my latest song, and so that gave me a little bit of a boost. It had 50 million views, and on the same day I put it up, it had 77 on Facebook.
Mad. How did you feel when that all happened and kicked off?
It was the mother. I've never had a dopamine hit like it. I was just sat on the stairs in my house, just looking through all the comments, and all the comments were so nice. There was like one. Normally I take quite a lot of shit, but there was maybe one comment in 500 was Aggie. You know, everyone was just, oh, this is so funny. This is what I've been thinking, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I'm really trying to go up a level and create more laughter for more people. And in doing so, create more opportunity and acclaim and everything else for myself. And that's what I'm really working on. Those Atman sketches, they're actually... about 8 or 9 years old, and I just happened to find them. Somebody mentioned them, and I thought, oh yeah, they were funny, those. So I put them up on Twitter again, and everyone thought I'd just done them last week, so I guess that means I'm aging well, because nobody notices that. But they went down really well, and the idea behind them was that there's this sort of geeky guy who designs apps, but the apps are how you control society and make it totally bent and crony capitalist and all the rest of it. And so, yeah, that one was how to rig the housing market was that one. How to screw a generation or something like that. I've just done a new one for Atman called Democracy, creating the illusion of choice. And
That's a favourable word along the media people. So yeah, it's a good choice.
Well, people think, like, it doesn't matter who you vote for, the government wins. And nothing's going to change. Everyone seems to think that Biden or Trump or Starmer or Sunak, like, it's not going to change anything. Bitcoin might, but Starmer and Sunak won't.
How long, before we get into a Bitcoin question, how long does it for you to come up with these lyrics, sort of?
It's a lot of work. Okay. Like a 2-minute song might, like, what'll happen is I'll have the idea for a song. And I don't write the music. A friend of mine writes the music. And so I often think of lyrics when I'm running or when I'm walking. I think it's something to do with the rhythm. And there's certain phrases that are just catchy. And actually that one started with "We're all racist now." That was the original lyric for that one. "We're all racist now." I was sat there with my... guy I write the songs with, and there's an old music hall song called "Knees Up, Mother Brown," which people used to sing back in the day, and he noticed that "We're All Racist Now" and "Knees Up, Mother Brown" are the same. They scan the same. So actually, "We're All Far Right Now" it's just following. It's not an original song. It's an old music hall classic that we reversioned. I tend to avoid doing reversions for all sorts of reasons. Because you can run into all sorts of copyright problems on the internet. And also this, but reversioning songs is an art in itself. But a lot of the time people think they're really clever because, you know, they changed a Britney Spears lyric and put "cock" in instead of something else. And it's like, oh, isn't that funny? And it's actually a bit, it's not that clever, but there are sort of witty reversions, and, reversion songs often work better than original songs because people don't realise it. They may not even realise that it's an old folk song or something, but they will have heard it at some point. So it just gives them a little bit of familiarity rather than a totally original new song. And that just sort of, like, do you remember that song, that Korean song? What was the Korean song? And there was a fat Korean guy doing dancing, and he got millions of
Gangnam Style?
Gangnam Style. And if you, like, listen to that, Gangnam Style, it was nuts how viral that song went. But there were loads of little bits in it that were just really, really reminiscent of other house tunes and other things. And it was just so it sounded familiar, even though it was new. And often a lot of hit songs will do that. So, yeah. But anyway, that started with We're All Racist Now. And then I thought We're All Far Right Now. And then it was actually the guy I write with who suggested We're All Mental Now. and yeah, so it all went from there. But yeah, and like one of the things, I'm guessing because you're both Bitcoiners, you're probably libertarians. One of the things I wrote way back in a long time ago was the National Anthem of Libertaria. And I wrote it, it's the Libertarian National Anthem, but I wrote it to the music of the Russian National Anthem. And partly because I just thought it was funny that something that was composed as the hymn of the Bolshevik Party should be used for libertarian things. But also because I Googled what were the best national anthems. And like, according to Google, the best national anthem is the Uruguayan national anthem. God knows why. But it's got like 15 different chord changes. But it's like, if you play it, nobody's heard it. But the second best national anthem usually is either the Marseillaise, France, or the Russian one. And the Russian one's so kind of uplifting, and also it's out of copyright. So I just use that one. But to get every kind of libertarian sentiment, you know, the main core things, sound money, limited government, low taxes, all that stuff, and get in all the lines, I must have worked on that for 3 months, every day. For an hour or two a day, I'd just chip away at it and just rephrase a line so that I could get... And it just took me ages. And that can happen with... There's some lyrics they just write themselves, particularly if you don't need to find rhymes or... and like the 17 Million F-Off song that I did, you know, that just wrote it. So I could write you a verse of that now while we're doing this thing, because it was just a list song and it didn't need to rhyme. But there are other songs that And We're All Far Right Now words itself fairly quickly, but other songs, I can be working at them for months. You know, and you do all of that, and you do 2 minutes of music, and then you go into the studio and you've got brilliant musicians and you record it, and then you make a video with a really talented videographer, and you spend a load of money, and you do the thing, and you put it on the internet, and it gets a few thousand views, and some bloke going, "Oh, look, isn't my baby cute?" gets 10 gazillion views, and you're like, "Oh, why do I bother?"
Yeah, that's true. There's one doing the rounds at the moment of, I don't know, some cute woman singing a song, and it's got like 20 million views just like out of nowhere. And you think, how can people, like, why do people stick to this and not actually the messages that we're actually trying to get across? And maybe it's an element of escapism.
But always tap into something. Those videos that go viral, they mean something to people. For some reason, they tap into something. Yeah. And it might be just... something as, like, we all know a bloke who's an idiot like that, or isn't that cute, or, you know, we've all been there. Like, do you remember Fenton, the dog? Like, the one...
I mean, yeah, so I do. Funny. Yeah, Fenton!
Everyone is... And also, that video, there was a... It followed, like, a classic joke structure is called the pull back and reveal. So you say something, and then you pull back, and you realise you're talking about something else. That's like a known... joke structure, and that Fenton one was a classic pull back and reveal, because you just heard Fenton, and then you pull back and there's a fucking herd of deer.
Fuck's sake, Fenton.
But it was a classic. It was actually followed a classic joke structure unintentionally, but and also everyone's been in the park and the dogs run out of control. Everyone's heard that sort of English slightly posh, authoritative voice that's just totally lost control. It just had so many glorious comedic things to it. But so anyway, yeah, there's one that I must have watched it a million times, was the monkey on the car, monkey on the car, fuck off. Have you seen that one? There's a little baby. And again, it's just, they always tap into something that, and so if you're trying to create popular songs, you have to hope that they tap into something as well.
Mate, are you sort of just a general antagonist, do you reckon? Or are you politically aligned to any sort of thing currently? Or what's your kind of motivation with putting these messages out? What's your kind of message in general terms?
I'm actually a fairly agreeable person. And
okay.
Anyone who knows me, I'm fairly agreeable and easy to get on with. But you know, I am a massive, massive believer that fiat money is the biggest problem. You know, if we can get rid of fiat money, so many, like a lot, you know, I'm friends with like Andrew Doyle and Constantine Kissin and all those guys who are fighting on free speech and all that. And I just go to them, if we could fix money, all this other stuff would just sort itself out, because the all the people who are clamping down and the censors would just lose their funding because government would get a lot smaller. So it just focus all your efforts on fixing money and none of this other stuff matters. But they don't.
Yeah, if you're friends with Constantine, maybe tell him to study Bitcoin once and not tell bullshit on the internet if he's in interviews. But, you know, that's a different story.
Well, I am good friends with him and he knows I like Bitcoin. And he's had like Safe Dean on his podcast and stuff. So, but anyway, they're fighting their own battles and they're quite heroic in their own way. And good luck to them. But the point being is that for me, if we sort of fix money, everything else falls into place. And I'm pretty sure Constantine gets Bitcoin. Anyway, that's by the by. So I'm a big believer in sound money, low taxes, simple taxes, limited government, individual responsibility, all that stuff. And I've just found myself writing, you know, I called my first album Libertarian Protest Songs, which is kind of what they are. And I keep coming back to the more, for whatever the political songs I do, they always get the most views. I don't know why. So they obviously tap the biggest nerve. And it's funny because most governments are not libertarian, with the exception of maybe Javier Milei and maybe a couple of others here and there. Most governments, particularly in Europe and America, are basically social democracies. But libertarianism, I think, is the I want to say religion, but the political, philosophical choice of the internet. And you know, that those are the best. It's got all the best memes. It's got all the best. And like, I'll give you an example. If you take the World Economic Forum a couple of months ago, Javier Milei did a speech there. Now, Javier Milei is a showman. If you see some of the videos he does, he was a TV presenter. He's a showman. But the speech he gave at the WEF was not a showy speech. He just read it and he didn't look up from his thing. So he's literally like this. Blah, 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 blah. And yet, because it was Mr. Libertarian at the WEF, really putting the boot into the WEF, it just went absolutely viral. And I looked on the WEF website that day and his speech had something like 5 million views. Okay. And the next most watched speech was Emmanuel Macron of France. And he'd had 20,000. Okay, so 5 million against 20,000. Now, Macron and that kind of, you know, it doesn't matter if it's Macron or Sunak or Biden, you know, that worldview that we know better than you, technocratic, EU, whatever you want to call it, social democracy, just dominates power. But on the internet, no interest. Libertarianism is the political philosophy of the internet.
And I guess it's also hard for a lot of people who are very engaged in politics to understand libertarianism, because on the one hand, they hear, oh, they don't want any government or as lean as government as possible. But then on the other hand, I mean, I think we can all agree, if you have to pay some version of tax and you actually know it's beneficial to either, you know, people in need, that you're going to fix roads, or you're going to fix infrastructures, this is something we can contribute to. But it's a very grey matter thing for a lot of people, because they look at it and go like, well, hang on one end, they kind of agree with what I'm saying, but then on the other end, you know, they're the far-right extremists, and they sort of say the completely different thing. And then in the end, it all comes down essentially to fiat money, as you said, and people just don't grasp that thing. I've got the theory, because we don't speak enough about money, no one wants to share what they earn, no one wants to share what they have in their bank accounts and speak about all of the different ways you can basically protect your wealth. And therefore, it gets lost a bit in between. But is sort of that closeness to libertarianism also the reason you got into Bitcoin, or is there a more fascinating story behind it?
Just coming back to what you were saying there, The Guardian described Milei as far-right libertarian. Now, how is that possible? You know, because far right is more government and Mussolini and all that kind of thing, and libertarian is as little government as possible. So it's literally an oxymoron. But anyway,
they just covered both bases. They didn't know what to call him.
Anyway, but how did I get into Bitcoin? So I was writing about gold a lot in the noughties. I found gold and I was actually trying to raise the money to put on a musical that my dad and I had worked on, and we needed 5 million quid to put it on in the West End. And I was trying to fit, we had a bit of money, but not 5 million quid. And I was on the internet and I just got divorced. And so I had a lot of evenings to myself. And everyone on the internet, this is 2005, 2006, they were talking about gold. And I was going to my dad, we need to buy gold because gold's going to go to $10,000 and fiat money's going to collapse and all this. And he was like, okay, whatever. So we put some money into gold. And then there were all these clever people talking about it. And I wanted to talk to them. And so, like you guys, I started a podcast as a means to talk to all these people, because I realised that if you just talk to them, they want money. But if you've got a podcast where they can advertise themselves, they'll do it for free. So anyway, like me advertising my newsletter, theflyingfrisbee.com, you should all subscribe. Anyway, so I started reading about gold and learning about gold. And then one of the people I interviewed just offered me a job writing for her magazine, Money Week, which is the UK's best-selling weekly financial magazine, a lady called Merin Somerset Webb. So suddenly I found myself a financial writer. And because I was writing about gold and it was going up, I was right. So I was writing in a language everyone understood about something, and people were making money and gold miners were going up, and I was a fucking genius. And then and I was always a known gold guy. And then people got in touch. And I've looked in my emails. The first email I had about Bitcoin was December 2010. And it was 22 cents. 22 cents. Oh, my God. If I knew now what I knew then. Or sorry, if I knew then what I knew now. And, like, I remember reading the article. And it was because I subscribed to this guy. I forget even what the newsletter was, but it was a thing about getting out of the system and living outside of the system with multiple passports and how to get passports in Panama and all that stuff. And he wrote, and he copied and pasted an article that had been published in all places, PC World magazine, about this new currency. And I read it and I thought, oh, that sounds good. And then I just went back to my day-to-day shit. And then a few months later, people started sending me coins. You've got to look at, you know how that when they try and orange pill you, they always send you coins. And I built up quite a big collection. And then I was so I didn't go to enough conferences. That was my mistake. I just sat in my stupid house. I should have gone to conferences. But by this point, gold, this is after 2011, gold had gone down the swanee, and all the junior mining companies, they were just disasters. And I looked on Bitcoin like it was another junior mining company. So all this stuff about Bitcoin's going to replace the dollar, Bitcoin's the new money. I was like, no, mate. I've been sold that one before. It's not going to happen. And then I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll buy 10 grand's worth of Bitcoin or something just so that I've got a position. And then it kept doubling. So it was like $1, $2, $4, $8. And I was like, I can't buy it when it's doubled. I can't buy it after it's doubled. And I should have just, whatever. But I still had quite a few coins because, as I say, people give me them. And then this guy brought out these physical coins. And I still didn't fully understand Bitcoin, but I was like, I want a physical Bitcoin because I understand that. Because they should back Bitcoin with gold was just something I was thinking at one point. Again, I didn't get it. And so I started bidding for these coins on eBay. And, you know, I'm just tight. You always leave stink bids and you expect them to get filled. And it was doubling on eBay. And I was like, and it was going like $30, $40, $50. And then it went to like $100. Oh, no, that was it. It went to $32 and it went all the way back to zero again. And I didn't buy because I thought, oh, well, there you go. Game over. It hasn't worked. And then it went up. And then I remember it went to about $100 and everyone's going, the Winklevoss brothers are buying in. And I said, those plums are overpaying. They are overpaying. What a pair of plums. And so, you know, I just didn't commit to it. But I still had, you know, a lot of coins. And then, of course, I got hacked. You know, I've spoken about this quite a bit and I got hacked. So by 2016, I had none. And but one of the in 2013, I wrote that book there, Bitcoin: The Future of Money, and it's the first book on Bitcoin from a recognized publisher. And it's also the best book on Bitcoin. But it came out in that first crypto winter, so it never got released in the USA. But it's a really good book. And I, even though I say so myself, but I wrote it as a kind of catch-up trade because I thought, well, I've missed buying it, but I'll become the main spokesperson. And that didn't happen either. But, you know, I'm not very good at managing stuff, but I've got better as I've got older. But the so all those things, so... You know, Bitcoin's been very good to me, and I, you know, I've got a healthy position, and I don't need to complain. You don't need to worry about me, but I'm not a Winklevoss. And the thing is, I have to admit, if I bought 10 grand's worth at a dollar, you know, I would have sold at $100. You know.
Yeah, that's
and then
right.
I would have sold. Yeah. I would have sold too many at $100. I would have kept them. And then when it went to $1,000, I would have sold some more. So that by the time I'd still have, you know, it's very hard to hold on.
Do you see Bitcoin as being like good for humanity? Do you, like, you see a lot of people sort of trying to future predict society under a hyper Bitcoinized world? Do you share, like myself, that kind of fantasy and the positivity you can bring about the world? And what does your sort of perspective look like? Or do you not tend to dwell too much in predicting the future?
I do. I think independent money is the solution. Non-government money. I almost don't care what the government non-government money is, as long as it's independent. So it could be gold, could be silver, could be Bitcoin, could be, you know, whatever. So any form of independent money that is widely accepted and used and as a store of wealth and a medium of exchange and eventually as a standard and as a unit of account is good. OK, so that's the fundamental bottom line. The problem is, and there's a lot of good people in Bitcoin and who have contributed a lot, given themselves to Bitcoin. You know, they really have, you know, they earn a living out of it, promoting it, but they... You know, they really have given themselves to it. But there's also a fuck ton of arseholes in Bitcoin who are arrogant as fuck and they've got 1,000 coins or 100 coins or whatever. And they were just, a lot of the time, they were lucky and they were clever enough to hold on or they held on accidentally. But if Bitcoin becomes some kind of international default money or the default cash system of the internet or whatever, there's going to be a fuck ton of arseholes who are really super rich. And maybe that's not a good thing. And hang on a minute. Sorry. Oh, fuck. Hang on a minute. Sorry.
It's the...
Yeah, it's one of the arseholes.
No, I was going to try and make a joke, but then I got sort of stage fright because I'm sat in the company of a comedian, so I was just probably going to fall flat on my ass. So I just hesitated and stopped short.
But you get my point about... So that concerns me. And there are still... I don't know how many people out there have got 1,000 coins, but probably... Maybe, I don't even know. Certainly more than 1,000, I would say. And, you know... Yeah, I just hope they learn humility.
Yeah, they say Bitcoin humbles you, but I'm not quite convinced yet because, like you say, there are a lot of...
It does. And you get Bitcoin at the price you deserve, yeah. That's true. But then a lot of people got lucky, yeah, as well.
That's also very true.
You know,
true.
There'll be, yeah, someone who's, mate, there'll be someone who's got 100 Bitcoins because he sold kiddie porn on the dark, on Silk Road or something. You know.
Exactly. Yeah. It's rare that we have a fellow Brit on the show, actually, and one that's heavily involved in the Bitcoin space. And it would be amiss of me to sort of ask you, as a fellow Brit, what do you think Bitcoin will help solve the most in the UK? And what,
well, man,
do you think the general, like, tone in the UK is for Bitcoin?
Okay, there's a few things there. Like, I think there's a very... distinct possibility that Satoshi Nakamoto is English. Okay? There's a high possibility. I mean, he was probably based in the East Coast because of all of his timestamps, but you know, he wrote in English. And he used that Times thing on the first day. And early on, you know, the early Bitcoin conferences, there were a lot of them were in England. You know, we were one of the starting points. And we've just lost a massive march on the rest of the world. Now, we are so behind. And a lot of it's because of stupid FCA rulings. They make it so difficult. The FCA is the British Financial Conduct Authority. And they make it so difficult for UK citizens to own Bitcoin. I mean, so difficult. And we're behind now. And we had Chancellor Osborne buying Bitcoins and Sunak going on about Britcoin and all this. And it's like, are you aware of what your own financial conduct authority is doing? It's like totally contradictory to what you're saying. And they've deprived so many British people of huge gains because it's just been so difficult to buy and invest in it. They've made it so hard. So in my view, they've got a fuck ton of stuff to answer for. And we're behind now. Like even probably France is ahead. Maybe France is always behind us. But maybe like, you know, Czech is ahead of us. Czech Republic. And Holland's ahead of us. Germany's ahead of us. And the States, of course it is. It always is. So, you know, we're stupid. We lost a march. But the reason I push everyone to buy Bitcoin and gold, but one or the other or both, in my newsletter, I just always push it because, you know, sterling is so vulnerable. Like, sterling's been weak since Brexit. Sterling's been weak since 2008, to be honest. But we, you know, America has got gold to back its currency in an emergency. We don't. And we're just sort of like, the whole of Western Europe is vulnerable because we don't make anything and our government's too big and bloated and, you know, we've lost touch with who we are and what we're about and we're no longer innovative and, you know, we're diluting ourselves and all this stuff. But the money, our money, on the continent, they've got a lot more gold. You know, presumably, you know, Germany's got gold, Holland, Italy, France, they've all got lots of gold. We don't. So sterling is really vulnerable. And so I just tell people, own non-government money.
Yeah, the FCA is really horrible. So I work for Relay and we've been trying to get into contact with them because, you know, I know maybe Ian is not going to give me the eye roll today, but, you know, the UK is European, although whatever the fuckers in Brussels want to believe you, want to make you believe. And if you contact them, it's basically, listen, this is our business plan. It's been working in this and this country. We've got the licensing here. We're going for a European license then. Everything is in motion. And the answer you get is, well, we don't understand Bitcoin, so therefore we don't allow it. And if you just think about this mindset, and if you look specifically at places like London, who have been the financial hub of the world for centuries, and to have this mindset is kind of mind-boggling because you sit there and go like, well, you've got an option to recover from whatever the fuckery you've been doing, but you just decide to sort of sit back in your chairs and go, we don't understand it, therefore we don't invest any time into it. Which as a non-Brit, and I've lived in England, or I lived in the UK, looking into it, going, well, that is actually quite like, you know, keep calm and carry on. So that sort of thing, if you don't understand, we'll just ignore it. But if you look into the near future, and if you've already seen all of the housing crisis and all of the energy crisis in the UK and stuff as well, you kind of go like, well, maybe you should invest at least some of your time into actually understanding it and then coming up with a framework. Because all of these shitcoin companies now lobbying in London as well, like even for them, they don't have a clue what's going on. So adding all of that together and comparing it to the rest of Europe, it's not only sad, it's actually also pathetic, whatever the government, whichever government in the UK is trying to do here.
Yeah, I mean, just because they don't understand it doesn't mean you can't. And, you know, if we'd had the FCA, we British and the Dutch kind of invented the stock market. And, you know, if we'd had the FCA, they would have banned it to protect investors.
That's true. Until George Soros comes and basically shorts the fuck out of the whole country.
Well, he will. He'll be looking at it. And I imagine every hedge fund in the world is looking at it. Mm-hmm. And you know, sterling's been surprisingly strong the last 6 or 9 months, but it's really vulnerable.
Is there anything in you where you go like, okay, if there's a certain threshold we're going to hit, I'm just basically going to leave the UK forever? Or do you stay behind because you do want to stay home and essentially build a better future?
Oh, man. like, give me, if America, somebody in America said, we want you to come and tour your comedy songs, or, you know, we want you to come and write a musical in New York or LA or something, I'm gone. I'm gone on the first plane out of here. I'm not hanging around for this shit. But my kids are here. My youngest is 17. And I always wanted, when they were grown, I wanted to go and become a digital nomad or something. You know, I'm quite tied here. You know, I've got a lot of possessions and stuff, but which I probably need to move on for. But yeah, no, if I could take my comic songs to America, I'm gone.
Mate, what would happen to the Flying Frisbee?
No, obviously, I'd still continue writing. I can write it from anywhere.
Mate, is it purely sort of from your perspective, or what kind of stuff can I find if I go on Flying Frisbee? And what's your mission?
It's an old school newsletter, market commentary and insights. And on Sunday, I write thought pieces about the state of stuff. Tend to be, and then Wednesday's market in market commentary, and we've got a portfolio, really sensible portfolio called the Dolce Far Niente, which means do sweet nothing portfolio. And there's a little bit of gold in there, a little bit of Bitcoin, a little bit of S&P, a little bit of energy, and it's a really good portfolio. It's done fantastically well, and so I can do that from anywhere, and you don't have to. We've got a lot of subscribers from the States and Canada, and quite a few from Europe, actually. You don't need to be English. I mean, the large majority is English, but it's by no means exclusively English. British.
I thought we got to go for a comment there, Ian, but I'll take the European perspective now.
No, I was just being a boomer and could get my mic off mute. But you go ahead, Joel.
There you go. The same as usual. Dominic, I think one thing I wanted to ask you is as well the involvement between Bitcoin, and we do see this now emerging with politics. You do see these, you know, policy institutes and these things popping up left, right, and center, and we sort of sometimes glamorize one politician if it says something good in a Senate hearing, but then forget about all the rest. How do you see about it? Because I know you've also been you've taken pictures with like Nigel Farage. You've been involved in that camp. I'm guessing you're leaning more to the conservative side from what I've heard you speak, if you have to choose between the two. Do you think we have to go into bed with the devil at one point? Do we have to convince them? Do we just have to let Bitcoin build, or sound money essentially build? Or what's your perspective there? Because they are a useful tool if you use them as a tool, essentially.
Yeah, well, I'm not a conservative. I think this conservative government is absolutely awful, and they've just betrayed the people and they've missed a huge opportunity. And I like Farage a lot. The problem is, if fiat money starts going down the swanny because of unsustainable debts and all the rest of it, and Bitcoin moonshots, Bitcoin will be blamed. It's got nothing to do with unsustainable deficit spending over decades. It's Bitcoin will be blamed. And so, you know, Bitcoiners will be lauded by some people for their wisdom and foresight. Others will be, you know, lynched and attacked and all the rest of it. So it's a problem. That's something, you know, in the event of hyperinflation. You know, you got a little taste of it in the COVID panics when there was nothing on the supermarket shelves, and you just suddenly started to see what people get like in a panic. They change. And you definitely want somewhere you can go and hide. I don't quite know what I'm saying, but I don't believe you achieve political change through politics. There's a good essay by Peter Thiel from 2008 called The Education of a Libertarian, and he talks about this, and it's not that good an essay. It's an okay essay, but because it's Peter Thiel saying it, you have to kind of like go, oh. But I agree with his central point, which is that he said that you don't achieve political... He learnt very young that you can't achieve political change through politics. You have to do it either through new technology, which is Bitcoin will do, and or you do it through new frontiers.
It would do.
Yeah, new frontiers and new, you know, he talked about seasteading was a thing, outer space, cyberspace, these are all new frontiers. But in the old physical economies that were designed around after the Industrial Revolution of the 19th century, which is what most Western European economies are, you can't achieve political change through politics. It's just not possible. Because by the time you get through the change, you have to go through so many hoops. It's all been diluted down. And it's taken us 20 years just to agree that making kids transition at the age of 4 is not a good thing. You know, that's taken 20 years of political fighting when it's just patently obvious. And coming back to an earlier point you made about Bitcoin, another thing that it's done is it's been the most brilliant educative tool. So anyone who's in Bitcoin now knows about fiat money and they know about inflation and all the rest of it. This was 15 years ago before it came around. If you said fiat money, you'd have to spend 3 sentences explaining what fiat money is. And so Bitcoin's been brilliant for that purpose. And, you know, people have been allured, they've been captivated by the potential gains, and then that's what's drawn them in. And then once they're in, they learn about all the other stuff. So what's the expression? Come for the gain, stay for the revolution, or something like that. And it's a great saying among many great sayings. In fact, I must write that down.
Another version of that is we came for the money, but stayed for the money as well. And I think that one's quite a clever one because obviously it redefines what money is.
Exactly. That's a great one. I've written that down as well. So...
But also, like... Sorry, go on.
So it's just what a brilliant thing it's been.
When you were mentioning the shelves at the supermarket during COVID, and it hasn't really recovered. You go to the supermarket now, half of the things that should be there aren't there anymore. And if you buy it, it goes off tomorrow or like it's on its last day. Things are sort of like buckling under its own weight, it seems. And I'm just wondering how bad it needs to get before people like sort of realise that there's an option that they could take up that might sort of solve a lot of these problems.
Yeah, well, I don't know. The more people, the surprising people are into Bitcoin, but the more people that get into it, the better.
Because obviously, I'm you know, when I do my weekly shop, sometimes with the missus, and like I look at the bill at the end of it, and I look at the trolley, and I'm like, wow, you know, what you could buy only a couple of years ago versus now is you know, there's a lot of difference.
And, I'll tell you something.
You know, people starting to sort of...
Thing, food is cheap in the UK. Like, we don't realise how lucky we are. It's more expensive on the continent and it's more expensive in the States. I was in the States for a month over Christmas, California, and I would say food prices in Californian supermarkets are twice what they are in England. And it used to be that America was cheaper than England, and it's not. It's more expensive. So, you know, and I take your point about shrinking, shrinking what you get in your trolley is a lot less than it was 2 or 3 years ago, but it's still more than you get in elsewhere.
If you're on your tools and you do a bits and stuff, do you also see people approaching you and asking you about Bitcoin? Is that something that's sort of linked to your name and your brand?
No.
Or is it still your basic preaching from the choir?
No, I'm seen as the gold guy more than the Bitcoin guy. And
interesting.
I mean, I like them both. And yeah, in Bitcoin, a lot of people don't know who I am.
That's true. Yeah, we had a lot of guests actually when we retweeted the video, going like, "Well, who's Dominic Frisby?" And we kind of went like, "Okay, that's interesting."
Yeah,
we thought it was a household name.
First book on Bitcoin.
There you go. See, you've got the proof of work to back it up.
Yeah, I have got the proof of work.
before we go into the closing segment of the show, I wanted to ask you, because obviously coming up with your songs, there's writing involved. You've written a book, you've written a newsletter. How do you approach these kind of tasks in your everyday life? Because I sometimes feel in the Bitcoin ecosystem, you see this, you maybe have other interests. In your part, I guess it's comedy, music, arts as a whole. Is it something which you take like very religiously, you know, having to sit down, having your cup of tea and basically needing to bang out the words? Or is it really something that comes natural to you?
No, I've got to sit at my desk. And my most productive time is, I have two productive times. One is the morning, and then I have quite a productive time between 5 and 7 now, actually, is usually a productive time for me. And so I try and do some sport or some exercise in the afternoon, go running or go cycling or play tennis or do some weights or something. And, but yeah, and I just, you got to sit down and just get on and write. And even, and whether it's a song or an article, you just, you can fanny around. And it's my dad always used to say this, is write something, because until you've got something, you've got nothing. So even if it's a piece of shit, at least you've got something. So I'm a big believer in just getting on with it. And I'm quite kind of like, if I don't write, I get a bit agitated. Like, I need to have written 1,000 or 2,000 words or written a chorus or something. I have to have something to show each day. It used to, and I've always been like that. I used to keep a diary, and if I didn't keep the diary, I'd just get aggy. I'd just get agitated. I just need to have made my little statement somewhere.
Yeah, it's helpful. I can see that. It's nice sort of getting it off your chest, even if it's just written down on a bit of paper, yeah, or in a song or up on the stage. I can totally get that. And, mate, it's been really cool, but we're winding up down towards the end of our show now. And we do the All Roads Lead Back to Bitcoin challenge for each of our guests at the end of each episode, okay, where we give you a word or phrase that you've got to try and relate back to Bitcoin to prove the theory that all roads lead back to Bitcoin. And we thought it would be a good idea to give you Del Boy and ask you.
Hey, I used to think all roads led to gold.
Oh, you thought all roads led to gold?
I accept all roads.
Right, okay.
Del Boy, what?
Well, let's. Del Boy, how does Del Boy relate back to Bitcoin?
Del Boy was around now, he wouldn't be in Peckham Market. He'd be on the dark web speculating in shit coins. And then he'd be going, then he'd lose all his money and be going, oh, I should have bought Bitcoin and just held that one.
Yeah, and he'd be blaming Rodney for it well.
Rodney lost the keys.
Well, actually,
that's
the
keys. Yeah,
Rodney had a key phrase, and he gave it to Grandad, and then Grandad thought it was Grandad threw it in the bin.
That's brilliant. That therefore we've proven with actually all of our guests now that all of these roads do lead back to Bitcoin.
I think the other thing Del Boy would do is he'd start a mining Bitcoin mining operation in Peckham.
Well, why not?
Yeah. That's the new pirate radio station phase, isn't it? Yeah.
Dominic, before we close up, is there anything you want to shill or pluck, and where can people find you if they want to get in touch?
Well, I have a comedy newsletter which you can read, dominicfrisby.com, or I have my main newsletter, theflyingfrisbee.com, and please subscribe to one or the other or both, and I promise you that you will be you will find some value in it.
Nice, perfect. Thanks for coming on, Dominic, or to give us your finite time, and also obviously the finite time of our listeners. And as always, guys, stay curious.